I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When you hear the word doula, you probably think of someone, usually a woman, who assists another woman through the childbirth experience. The work of a doula is to help a mother and maybe her partner in the transition from pregnancy through childbirth to parenthood. Really, it's about that transition. Apply that to other life transitions, and the role of a doula becomes care and support through massive change. There's a growing movement to support and encourage the use of non-medical support through death. The term death doula may not be quite so familiar, but that's what we're going to talk about today. Death doulas are not nurses or doctors. They're not providing medical hospice care. They're helping in all kinds of other care. They're there to listen, to help people figure out what they want at the end of life, to provide emotional support for partners and family, and other ways that a dying person might want or require a dedicated support person. Joining us to explain what this is and isn't is Francesca Arnoldi. She developed UVM's professional certificate program for death doulas, and she's also written a soon-to-be-released book about the essentials of death doulas care. Francesca, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
So I talked a little bit about it, but let's go back first before we get into death doulas. What's a doula exactly?
It's an ancient Greek term that means women's servant, so a woman who serves other women. And we have adapted the term to now mean a person who provides non-medical emotional support to another person. And as you said, through different rites of passage, different major life transitions, including birth and death.
I mean, most people, I think, associate a doula with someone who's helping in childbirth. Is this sort of a co-opting of that term, or do you really think it's an expansive term?
I think we're borrowing it and translating it. There are so many similarities between birth and death that it makes sense. And instead of a servant role, really being of service to someone in a very similar capacity.
And you actually do both, right?
Yes.
So does it feel similar to you? I mean, there are obviously some very large differences between birth and death, but you also said a lot of similarities.
Right. I have been a birth worker since 2009 and have gotten quite comfortable in that realm. And then when I went to be with my grandfather, who was dying about 4 or 5 years ago, I entered into this space without any preconceived notions, without any preparation. And while I was with him for his final 24 hours, I was so surprised by how similar the space felt. It's so mysterious. It's so unique. And generally, the people who are involved are really uncomfortable with it. Of course, it's very emotional, but birth is very emotional as well. The outcomes are different, but the ability to hold space and be that comforting presence for people is so supportive in both birth and death.
So go a little deeper into what you do then as a death doula, this idea of holding space, but other things that you do as well.
Sure. In our UVM training, we distinguish ways of being a doula and ways of doing doula work, and both are really important components. So we talk about being non-judgmental, having no agenda going in, which is really goes back to being of service to someone in ways that are very personally meaningful and fulfilling to each client, and then ways of doing doula work. So offering, helping with planning. So just as a birth doula would help a couple with birth wishes, an end-of-life doula can help someone think about, well, what are your end-of-life wishes? How do you want your care to feel as you're living right up until you're dying, and as you're actively dying and you're not able to communicate those wishes anymore, and then aftercare preferences as well.
You know, sometimes I think people think of the word doula and then the idea of somebody who's assisting in birth or now in death as this sort of hippie crunchy idea and somebody who's going to come in and tell you, you know, breathe through your heart. And that might not appeal to everybody.
Sure.
Is it that sort of semi-spiritual thing, or is it, as you talk about not having judgment, that it could be very sort of practical as well?
I think both, and it depends on the client. It's very individualized. So as part of our training and preparation, we really have to do some introspective work and look at ourselves. What's important to us? What's meaningful to us? What are our belief systems? What are our own fears? Looking at our own mortality, really processing so that when we enter the space of a client, we leave all that baggage at the door and we're ready to just intentionally enter curious and open and ready to meet the person wherever they're at. So we don't bring our stuff and overlay it onto their experience.
So Francesca, can you get us into some of the nuts and bolts of what you actually do as a death doula or what one would do?
In terms of training or the work?
The work.
The work. So it would be setting up a number of meetings and developing rapport, getting to know someone, developing that sense of trust. And then it could be things like going through fears and anxieties, helping someone work through those, connecting them with helpful resources. So anything that a doula doesn't offer, we have a directory. And as part of the UVM training, that's a running assignment. And we add to it each week, depending on the topics, so that we can, when it's out of role and scope, we can refer people out to others who can help. We could lead some guided imagery or relaxation exercises, and we can make those quite personalized for the client if that's something that appeals to them. We highly promote informed consent. So we think that that's really important for people to be actively involved in their care and in their experience. So making sure they have all the information they need to make good quality decisions about their own care. Research really shows in birth, and I assume also in death, that that helps people feel more positively about their journey. We help them complete advanced directives, and we also can do legacy work and that completion closure work at end of life that helps people find contentment and peace.
You're not doing medical care.
Right.
Are you doing housework?
Sometimes. Yes, I think that that can be quite helpful, and it can lift quite a burden off people. So it's specific to the doula, but definitely, some doulas are willing to even stack firewood or weed a garden or wash a sink full of dishes or fold a basket of laundry. And during that time, it could be spending quality time conversing with a client or the client's loved ones.
What do you do in terms of support for loved ones? Because obviously the dying process is often both an emotional and physical burden, practical burden. And I don't mean burden in the sense that it's work you don't want to be doing, but it's really difficult work if you're a loved one of someone who's dying. So how do you support the people who are really intimately connected with that person?
We feel that a doula's focus is the client, but in order to meet the needs of the client, we recognize that the greater picture needs to be considered. So a client might be feeling stressed out because he or she knows that their partner is really overworked, exhausted, and stressed. So it could be providing some respite so that the loved one could take a nap or go run errands, or also encouraging them to take care of themselves, a little self-care time. And also being a listening ear. If we see that there's stress or arguments, people are at different places in their ability to accept what's happening in the moment. So it might be asking if someone wants to go for a walk and just talking something through.
You mentioned that one of the really important things is informed consent and having a person who's nearing the end of his or her life be able to say, this is what I want. This is what I want the process to look like. This is what I want for my last wishes. This is what I want to happen right after I die. So it sounds like they need to get connected with a death doula early enough so that they can do that, because a lot of people as they near death are incapable of speaking or expressing their wants and desires. And yet, you know, most of us don't want to think about death too early, or, you know, how and you know, I'm not going to hire you necessarily if I think that my death is 50 years away. So what's the appropriate time to get in touch with a death doula?
Sure. Ideally, you would have the space to have those important conversations while a client is able to. If not, then it's really turning to the loved ones and hoping that they could speak as the client. So when someone is handed a terminal diagnosis, that would be an ideal time to make a connection, to reach out to a doula, to make sure it feels like a good match, and to develop that relationship. And it might not mean that you have to meet numerous times per week. It could just mean establishing a relationship and then mapping out a plan for a once-a-week check-in, or really depending on the needs. And then that might ramp up, and so a doula's presence might increase then as things progress.
People have always done this kind of work, and, you know, there are lots of friends who will step in and say, I want to support you as you're dying, or I want to support, you know, my friend as her spouse is dying. So what's the difference between someone who's actually trained as a death doula and someone who's being a supportive care person and friend during the dying process?
What I've loved about the course is seeing the variety of people that we have found and invited to participate. It was surprising to me because I assumed it would be all aspiring doulas. And then after we launched, I figured out it was not. And so we have people who are working in the medical field, people who are mental health counselors, people who are spiritual care providers. We have hospice volunteers. And we also have people who are caring for a loved one who want more information and more confidence. So we welcome everyone. And I truly believe that we can all cultivate the doula heart and that it can be helpful in all work and in all relationships, in all conversations. It's really something that I practice in life. So there's space for it all. There's space for people who just want to implement and infuse some of these approaches and techniques in their own life or in their own work in the realm, and then people who want to practice as professional doulas.
What's the doula heart?
The doula heart. It's full of compassion and non-judgment and ready to serve.
Sharon is calling in from Berkshire. Hi, Sharon. Go right ahead. Hey, Sharon,
Hi.
Are you there? Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Decades ago, I was honored to be able to care for my grandmother while she was dying, the last 3 months of her life. And, you know, I became kind of aware of the culture, the American culture around death, and we seemed to push it away and make it clinical and avoid it. And I really appreciate that doulas are working to turn it back into a personal, customized experience that is part of life instead of this remote thing that happens in hospitals far away from us.
Sharon, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for sharing it. And Francesca, you talked about witnessing and being present for your grandfather's death. Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit more about what your experience has actually been like in helping to care for people at the end of their lives?
Sure. Beyond caring for loved ones, I've also had the honor of being a hospice volunteer and working at the respite house. And there was one particular story that I ended up writing a poem about, and I'll read that quickly. So it's called A Sit with M. I find my breath, guilty or grateful. I check for signs of yours, lucky or lingering. I see in your tired eyes, which I wipe with dampened cloth, yearning. I feel in your shaking hand, which I hold gently in mine, restlessness. I hear in your muted sounds, which I strain to comprehend, love. I sit as doula, I sit as human, I sit as life, bright yet knowing, witness to thresholds, present and still. And this particular morning, I was asked to go sit bedside by a woman who was experiencing a lot of anxiety. And it's not uncommon at end of life for people to experience what's called terminal agitation or terminal restlessness before they transition into active dying. And sometimes there are physical reasons for this that can be identified by the care team, and sometimes there are not. So the care team was really trying to attend to her holistically. They adjusted the lighting in the room. They made it more dim. They put on some soothing music. And they also gave her a very soft stuffy to hold in her arms. And they asked for me to come in. So I came in and sat next to her bed and just really met her where she was at from moment to moment, which shifted drastically. Her energy, she was sort of thrashing and rolling around in bed and making utterances that I couldn't understand sometimes, but also speaking in ways that I could understand at others. So it was attending to her physical needs, like wiping her eyes, which she said were really bothering her and were hurting, and then attending to her feet, which she said were really bothering her. So adjusting her pillows and shifting her feet for her and just holding her hand and being with her. And providing a calm presence, not in the sense that I felt like she needed to be calm because that was her journey, her experience, but that she could see that there was somebody next to her so that she didn't feel neglected. She didn't feel lonely. She didn't feel isolated. She had a witness to her experience. She had a companion. She had an ally who was with her.
What does that feel like for you? Because there must be work, and a lot of what you do now as working with people who want to learn this kind of practice and perhaps do it professionally is helping them learn how to do this and how to be in that moment without then getting overwhelmed by your own emotions. Because
right.
even if you're not intimately connected to somebody, to be there in their final moments is a very emotional experience, and certainly one that then is emotional for the caregiver as well.
Mm-hmm. We talk in the course about intentional presence and with our preparation, really getting to know ourselves very well and our own fears and then our own triggers. And you can't prepare for every trigger. So when we're in the middle of our work, if we happen to be triggered by a sight, a smell, a sound, then we can hear it and we can note it and we can keep it in the backdrop of our minds and know that that is a signal that we need to attend to that after we're out of our client's realm and space. And we really need to. We need to process that. We need to debrief. We need to have self-care practices in place for that so that we don't get burnt out, because we need to recognize it is very emotional work, but we don't go into that when we're in the client's space.
Rachel wrote in to say, I think it's wonderful that Francesca is doing the work and bringing this option to Vermont families. There's such a beautiful parallel between birth doula work and death. Death doula work also parallels beautifully with postpartum doula work. It's all about finding how you can best help this particular person and this particular family through this time of transition. Our society has moved away from family and neighbors as a community, and doulas help fill that need. And let's go to Roberta, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Roberta. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Francesca.
Hi, Roberta.
I just wanted to underscore how this is not a hippie concept, which I think came up earlier in the conversation, and wanted to tell you about a widow from 9/11 who's actually taking the course now, that having taken the course and been part of the launch of the course, I want to assure listeners that this is something that helps you, yourself, your family, friends, whether you become a doula or not. It is a magnificent program developed with Dr. Gramling at UVM, with Hospice VNA, and Francesca was our pioneer gatherer of good work throughout the country on this subject. Thank you.
Yeah, Roberta, thanks very much for your perspective. Appreciate that. And the underscoring that this is not necessarily something that's just sort of in the spiritual realm for people who are not necessarily feeling that space. Anja wrote in to say, as a house call small animal veterinarian, I have been called endearingly a death doula. It's an amazing, humbling position to be in. It's nice to hear about the dying process improving for humans, as generally I feel that our animals are treated more compassionately at death. We're talking about what a death doula does today and wondering if you've had experience with that kind of supportive non-medical care at the end of life for someone you know. Do you see the value in this work, and how do you think it should be paid for? Is this something that only people who can afford it will wind up getting as part of a broader medical system maybe? Could it be incorporated into some kind of medical care or insurance? Our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at what a death doula does. Call 1-800-639-2211 with your questions or ideas about supportive care at the end of life. You can also post your comments on the VPR Facebook page. And again, our number is 800-639-2211. Francesca Arnoldi is a death doula. She developed UVM's professional certificate program for death doulas. She's starting to work with the VNA as well, the Visiting Nurse Association. And joining us now on the line is Tara Graham, Executive Director of Hospice and Palliative Care for the Visiting Nurse Association of Chittenden and Grand Isle Counties. Hi, Tara. It's nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you. Hi, Francesca.
Hi, Tara.
So as I said, you're starting to work with Francesca and work with this concept of a death doula, but I'm wondering how the VNA sees this work. You know, do you see it as complementary? Is it somehow, could there be a potential for feeling like you're stepping on each other's toes? Or how do you see it working with what visiting nurses do?
I see the death doula program as complementary to the hospice model of care. And I mean, Francesca can tell you my history with, I was a bit of a skeptic to start when the UVM death doula program was starting. I wasn't quite sure how it would fit in, but I was also new to hospice at the time and thinking about seeing the parallels between what hospice volunteers do and what the death doulas are looking to do. Seeing how would that play out in real life and for people, and then noticing as I learned more about hospice, specifically about hospice utilization in Vermont, there's so many people who die without hospice and without having engaged in that level of service. And so I would think about the people who were not engaged in hospice services and what would their death look like and what are the possibilities there. And then I focused a little bit more on the people who are within our program and the people who are receiving hospice services and still seeing the opportunities for more service to have a stronger impact on people's lives. So having kept in contact with Francesca, watching the development of the program, and really looking towards, I participated in the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization Leadership Conference in April, and that is when they convened a work group of people to look at end-of-life doula, the End-of-Life Doula Council, and really saw that as an opportunity to start engaging more fully with doulas in our program, first as volunteers and looking at how they can fill some of the gaps in service.
So we got a note from Barbara in Fletcher who says, why are death doulas needed when we have hospice? Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that, Tara?
I think it comes down to choice and information. And I think that, you know, our first problem in the state is hospice utilization, one of the big problems, because people live longer and die better if they have engaged in hospice services sooner. Their quality of life is much higher. But, you know, there may always be people who, for whatever reason, determine that they don't want to engage in hospice. And as Francesca was describing, there's people who are looking to develop a death plan, and that may or may not mean the end of somebody's life. Whereas under hospice, you a physician needs to certify that you have 6 months or less with your terminal illness if you were not to engage in any curative treatments. And so I feel like there's, I think we often in the world of professional worlds, we get hung up on who's doing what, and this is my territory, that's their territory, instead of acknowledging that there's still people whose needs aren't met. And maybe perhaps there's enough room for everybody, and we can figure out how to work together so that people have ultimate choices and can engage in the services that make the most sense for them.
Is there anything about what death doulas do that you don't support or that you think perhaps get in the way of other caregivers?
I think they sort of operate in the gray realm, and we try really hard to be clear about whose role is what, because there's we do consider ourselves, we are medical care, we are expert medical care at the end of life, and we have an interdisciplinary team that's comprised of bereavement specialists and social workers and chaplains and licensed nursing assistants and nurses and the volunteer services. And so we just don't want people to, we get hung up on our boundaries. And at the same time, if a nurse is in the presence of a family member who's experiencing spiritual distress, they're not going to not address that. We have to respect that we're always kind of operating in this realm of trust and professionalism. And so I could see integrating the doulas onto our team as being challenging at first, just as people build relationships and trust with one another, and then see the value that they bring so that we can focus on the patients and their families rather than on, getting hung up with one another.
That's Tara Graham, Executive Director of Hospice and Palliative Care for the Visiting Nurse Association of Chittenden and Grand Isle Counties. Tara, thanks for being on the show today. I appreciate your perspective.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Kristen is calling in from Weybridge. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, I 10 years ago, 11 years ago, took the hospice volunteer class in Middlebury. And so now I have been, for many years, a hospice volunteer. And I have, of course, sat vigil with many people and had a few deaths, and I feel that it has been a gift to me to be able to be a hospice volunteer and help these people make that final journey. I really love being a hospice volunteer. I can't think of anything more that I would rather do than to be a hospice volunteer.
When you say that, Kristen, nothing you would rather do, it must also be hard work in addition to being valuable. How do you practice that self-care or be supportive without finding yourself emotionally overcome?
Well, here's just an example. When I was 2 years old, a family moved next door to me. And I became good friends with the family, of course, and her daughter was my best friend. And when her mother was dying at the age of 99, I called her in California and said, your mother is dying and you really need to come. She did come back, but she said, I'm not going to stay with her. I can't stay with her at night. And so I stayed with her for 3 nights, and I held her in my arms when she died. And she was one of my most favorite people in the whole world, and what a gift that was to me. And so I don't feel it as being a hardship. I feel it as being a given thing that's going to happen to all of us and I can accept it, and I think that they can accept it too. When you start to really hold on to them, I held her in my arms, and it was just lovely.
Kristen, thank you for sharing that. Appreciate hearing from you. Francesca, you know, we're talking about the difference between a visiting nurse and somebody who's doing some forms of hospice care. But in terms of hospice care, there are also hospice volunteers who are doing a lot of similar work. So there's a lot of overlap between what various people who are assisting in dying do, including some people who are doing medical care and also trying to be supportive and therapeutic and there as somebody who can just be there. But often, you know, nurses, for example, have a lot of clients. They don't have the time for that. So is that one of the areas where you see a gap where a death doula can come in?
Sure. Some of it is just filling in the time for people, the coverage, because the goal of hospice is generally to keep people at home if they feel safe and comfortable there. So providing enough support to them so that they can remain home. But it's a lot of work for loved ones. We, you know, when I joined my grandfather's dying experience, my grandmother was in her 80s and she was the primary caregiver. So she was receiving wonderful hospice care, but she was the primary caregiver providing care round the clock 24/7. And she hadn't slept well in days. She was exhausted. So we can step in and fill in those sort of time gaps and provide more coverage in that way. To me, as a doula for birth doula work and end-of-life doula work, I look at myself as a bit of a chameleon, providing chameleon care, and it requires a lot of flexibility. We have to be very graceful and malleable and be able to read the room and assess what's needed and what's not. And so we step in or step back according to the needs of the moment and according to the comfort zone of everyone involved, really honoring that. Where does everyone want to be? How can we plug people in terms of the natural support system? And how do we make sure we're not duplicating services or overstepping when it comes to the medical care team?
Barbara and Fletcher, who asked what's the difference between, you know, hospice care and why do you need a death doula if you have hospice care, also says, well, who oversees the doulas to make sure they are professional in their approach?
It's an emerging field currently, so we don't have an overseeing body, neither do birth doulas. So there are many training organizations and some memberships, some professional memberships, but we don't have an overseeing body.
So what do you do in the certificate program that you helped develop at UVM?
Sure. So this started a couple of years ago. I spent a year researching and developing, interviewing, gathering the curriculum. I call myself a bit of a curator of the program. And it came to us from the generosity of Cabot Co-op and Roberta McDonald, who we heard from earlier. She was really...
She was the one who called in.
Yes. She was the inspiration behind the idea because they're coming up on a centennial year and they wanted to help support the community and to help support their community of rural farmers who tend to prefer a more natural experience of living and dying. So in the course, it's an 8-week online course. We have 8 required modules and 1 bonus module, which is about the job of a doula if you're going to become a professional practicing doula. And we really go over the realm in general, and we hear from so many voices throughout the course. We learn about hospice care and palliative care and all of the team members there. And we learn about religion and spirituality. We go over professional and personal boundaries. We talk about the different ways of being a doula, like companioning versus treating and serving versus helping, how to hold space. We cover a couple of concepts that we've borrowed from Buddhism, from pragmatic secular Buddhism, like turning toward and beginner's mind, having that curiosity always, being always ready to learn from our clients and from death, never assuming that we are the expert on anything. We talk a lot about grief and a lot about loss and all the components there involved, sort of leading up to a death and afterward. And then the ways of doing doula work as well, the planning, the vigil work, the vigil planning, the vigil sitting, and a lot of introspective work that the doulas are asked to really look at their own mortality, their own wishes, their own planning, and some practice too, like dignity therapy, which is a life review session with a volunteer.
You know, doing this work is one thing if you're doing it for someone, you know, one time or someone you know and love or somebody that you're stepping in to help or even as part of a volunteer job. But if this is what you want to do professionally, you have to get paid for it.
Right.
And this is not something that I've seen on a lot of insurance, you know, lists of things that they cover. So how is this going to be something that people who need it can afford or can have access to, rather than, you know, the wealthy few who know about it and can afford to hire a death doula, or death doulas who are doing this professionally but really not making a livable wage?
Mm-hmm. It's similar to the struggles of birth doulas. There's the struggle of just charging for this type of work, which is hard for doulas to value their time and expertise, in a sense, for this, to be able to ask for money in return. And also, how is it covered? So most doula work is private pay. We do feel like there are opportunities, such as Choices for Care, where a person receiving money can allot funds toward different services that work well for them. So we think that there are opportunities for at least some reimbursement, if not some insurance coverage. And we hope, as we establish the role, and as Tara mentioned, the National Hospice and Palliative Care Org just developed a doula council. We feel like that's also huge for role recognition right now. So we're hoping that eventually it will be considered to be good use, and maybe we'll pass legislation that will require insurance coverage. And we've seen a lot of research come out about birth doulas and how effective the work is for lowering costs and increasing patient satisfaction. We feel strongly that the same will be found for end-of-life doulas.
Francesca Arnoldi developed UVM's professional certificate program for death doulas. She's also written a soon-to-be-released book about the essentials of death doulas care. Thank you very much for talking with us, Francesca.
Thank you for having me.